nobody could. Like, where are the bone thugs in? Are they in harmony?
Hey everybody, welcome to another one of these. I'm Pete. We're coming at you from our brand new studio in a new apartment. That's when I say new studio, I mean new apartment, which is where I live. This is where I live now. Supposed to be that this is where we used to live, but didn't work out. So we've got a nice view. I can see a Hobby Lobby. I can see a children's playground right outside my window. When the guy was showing us around the place, it was like, oh, well, here's the, you got a nice view out, whatever, and you're not looking straight into another building, which I'm like, yeah, I kind of like that. But I don't love looking straight out onto a playground. It's funny, like, I've discovered that I took a hilarious sexual harassment training at work. Sometimes I feel bad talking about the qualifications of, what am I talking about? Talking about sexual harassment training is a big joke because everyone's like, it's serious. And to an extent, I agree. However, in another way, I'm kind of like, yeah, I can take it seriously to a point. And then at some point, it becomes dumb. So I was taking the sexual harassment training. Now, I'm sure astute listeners will remember my last sexual harassment training. By the way, these are like for everybody, not because I'm being punished. This is one of the things that I think is ineffective sometimes about sexual harassment training, is that it's like used as a punishment for people who do it instead of a preventative measure. But also, I don't know, someone's going to have to dial in and tell me if sexual harassment training where you are is actually effective or useful, or if it's what mine seems to be, which is like, okay, now the HR department is like, okay, we've given a sexual harassment training, so now we feel like we can hold someone responsible for sexual harassment, which seems like a silly thing to me because I'm like, well, I think that I haven't taken like a don't do cocaine at work training, but I think there'd still be some consequences. And if I did do cocaine at work and got caught and there were consequences, I don't know how upset I could be about it. So anyway, our last one was pretty ridiculous. It had some silly scenarios, and the silliest was something about, like, it would not be appropriate to ask a coworker to fish coins out of your front pants pocket. Which I was like, well, no fucking shit. But also, why would I ever be doing that in the workplace? And who is going to look at that and say, well, this would be appropriate? I mean, it is what it is. It's stupid. And what it is stupid. It is what it is, and what it is stupid. So anyway, I started taking the new one. And here's how I do a lot of the trainings we get at work, which the nonsense ones. I skip through as much as I can to the quiz and then take the quiz at the end, because if you pass the quiz, then you pass the class. And I kind of go by this philosophy of, well, if I can pass the quiz without taking the class, I obviously know the material already. So I'm not even trying to, like, skirt the rules. I'm just kind of, you know, I figure, hey, why take a class over information I already know? It would be like if they gave us a mandatory training on comic books that was like, okay, well, Amazing Fantasy 15 is the first appearance of Spider-Man. And I'm like, guys, I do a Spider-Man podcast. I don't need this information. So this time, you know, one of the tricks that these companies that design these trainings, by the way, like, this is a good business to get into. Make HR training modules. Because they look like shit. You don't have to spend any time on them. And also, I think they cost like hundreds of dollars. So all you got to do is like make it and then give it to people and just be like, just $400. And they're like, well, it's this. Hey, I know that sounds expensive, but one sexual harassment lawsuit could cost your company millions. So this one I'm going through and it had some questions. The first question was like, would it be appropriate to say you look nice today? And this is, you know, how we get back to this whole having a playground out the window thing. And this is something that I think people don't understand about what it means to be a dude in my workplace, because it's like all ladies. But it's like, okay, if you want to be a dude in a workplace and you don't want to be an asshole, you kind of have to go out of your way to not be suspicious or to not act weird. And like, you look nice today is probably not something I would say to a coworker, unless we were pretty close. Not because I think it's like, I don't think it's inappropriate, and apparently it's not, is what I learned in the training. So apparently I can go up to someone and be like, hey, look nice today. Which I think is funny too, because it's all in text. And I'm like, well, isn't there a difference between me saying, oh, you look nice today, and hey, you look nice today. Like, isn't that totally different? But so I was like, well, while I wouldn't do it, I don't think I would call it inappropriate either. So I marked that, and that's correct. Another one was like, a male coworker is giving shoulder massages to female coworkers constantly. And I was like, well, yeah, I'm going to assume that's not appropriate. And then the third question, and I want you to know, too, the graphic design of these questions is horrendous. I'll try and put it as the album art on this episode. I think I've got it here. Just so you can see how poorly designed it is. But you know those like little, they're these little faceless, sort of formless white guys. They kind of look like the T-1000 when it's first turning into a human shape. But like the Pillsbury Doughboy, if the Doughboy was like the T-1000, but instead of liquid metal, he was dough and could reform himself, that's kind of what it would look like. You've seen these before. These are in like lots of corporate trainings and stuff. I think they're kind of like maybe the last gasp of sort of a clip art that you would get with Microsoft or whatever. So, this guy is there and he's got a word balloon and it says appropriate or not appropriate. And you have to click a little radio button and it says, you would look good in a wet t-shirt contest. So I got to this question, I immediately screenshotted it and just was laughing for like a good 2 or 3 minutes. And I had to go into some other offices and be like, do we really have to do this? Have you guys done this yet? Have you seen this shit? And it's stuff like that that I think kind of drives home the worthlessness of sexual harassment training. Because it's like, well, if I as an adult man need to be told that saying you would look good in a wet t-shirt contest would constitute potential sexual harassment, like, there's no hope for me. There's no hope for me. It's ridiculous. It's asinine. And just like, what, in what world could you say that and then not be sexually harassing somebody? I do wonder about things though, like, okay, I was thinking about, you know, because like if you take an HR diversity training too, right, it will be like, can you ask somebody what their race is? And it's like, well, in a job interview, and it's like, no, not really. Although it is funny because you can, this is the thing. If these trainings were helpful, they would tell you what the rules were, what the common workarounds are and stuff, not because people are trying to work around it, but so that you can identify what those workarounds are. For example, when Cassie was trying to get me a job with the Multnomah Library District, and they were like, does he have African-American cultural competencies? That's kind of a sneaky way of asking my race. Or, you know, I don't know what it would be. I guess, like, maybe if I was, like, well, I was about to say if I was, like, Rachel Dolezal and was raised with, like, black siblings, but then I was like, oh, I don't know. I don't know if she has African-American cultural competencies or the opposite of that, whatever that is. I don't know. Time will tell on her, I suppose. Point being, though, I was like, why don't these sexual harassment trainings like actually provide something useful? For example, one of the questions said something like, your boss comes up to you and says, I want you to come to my like mountain getaway cabin with me for 5 days. And if you don't do it, then you're not going to get that promotion. And it's like, appropriate or not appropriate. No fucking shit, right? I think a better version of that question, and one that's like actually would require you to think about it and gives someone useful advice, would be, okay, you went out on one date with someone at your work, and then you didn't hit it off, in your opinion, so you stopped dating them. 6 months later, this person has been promoted to a supervisory position, and you went for a job promotion within your department, and this person's now your supervisor. Now, you didn't get the job, but you suspect it's because you spurned their romantic advances. What would be the good first steps you should take? That seems helpful to me, because that seems realistic. That seems like something that could happen. I mean, I guess the thing is I'm like, I don't know how much help people need with a question like, your boss straight up tells you, like, hey, let me sexually harass you or you're fired. And it's like, is that appropriate or not? And also, the question, is that appropriate or not, isn't really helpful. I think a better question is, what are the steps you take? What do you do if that happens? Because, you know, it's hard to know. Funny enough, I got a text from a friend of the show, Nicanor, just a couple days ago after I took this sexual harassment training. And it was, he was like, hey, I just heard this story on NPR. And it was some lady who was like carpooling with her boss, and her boss was sexually harassing her in the car. And he was like, I was thinking of your old boss. We'll just call her Jody, who we drove to a conference together. Okay, I'll just tell the whole story in brief, but it's important where this all begins. This begins with me getting a bunch of sausage from my uncle in Chicago. I go to Chicago, and he insists that me and my brother take home. He's got a bunch of Italian sausage and like a whole huge pack of hot dogs. He insists that we bring these home. That's the kind of guy he is. So, you know, we find out the airline regulations and stuff. It becomes this whole to-do because it's like, oh, well, it turns out you can pack it in like cardboard with dry ice or something and X pounds of dry ice and blah, blah, blah. So I bring home this sausage. Now, I didn't cook up this sausage immediately, which was a mistake, but also there was a lot of it. So I eventually make pasta and sausage, and it's so good. And I got so sick. My roommate also got sick. Now, he didn't get quite as sick as I did, because I don't think he ate quite as much. But I mean, this is a sick where sometimes people are like, I don't know, maybe I got food poisoned. I'm not sure what happened. And I'm kind of like, I know for a fact I've been food poisoned once, and it's pretty obvious. Because like, I woke up, my stomach was killing me. It was like hot to the touch on the outside. And then as I was throwing up the sausage, it was like almost entirely whole. So anyway, I was sick for like a good week and just like couldn't keep anything down. I had to work my way up to like solid food. And I had to, at some point, I was like, all right, I think I can go into the King Soopers and get some food. But it was like I had to drive myself there, even though I lived a block or two away, and then work up the energy in the car to actually go in the store. It was horrible, is what I'm saying. The end of this week of sickness was this library conference. I think it was the first one I ever went to. And it was in, I don't know, somewhere Denver-y, maybe an hour, a little further away. Maybe it was like Colorado Springs even. And it was a 2-day conference on the weekend. And so I'm just recovering from this illness or whatever. I've still got like horrible heartburn. I mean, I threw up so much that I think I was like, my esophagus was just raw. And my boss is like going to the same conference. So she's like, well, let's carpool. And I was like, okay. So she comes in her daughter's car and picks me up. And her daughter's car is like a Saturn, like a two-door Saturn. And her daughter, and you know, I'm still feeling not sick. I'm not like I'm going to vomit, but I was just like not feeling amazing yet. And her daughter had had like a gallon of vinegar in the car and spilled it all over the interior somehow. So the car reeked of vinegar. And so I get in the car with my boss and it reeks of vinegar. And I was just like, well, this is the next 2 hours. It's like the dead of winter. So there's no chance of rolling down the window. And I was just like, well, this is pretty hellish already. So we're driving and she kind of told me some of her life story. But one of the highlights was she claimed that in the maybe in the 70s or the 80s, that a photographer from Playboy was courting her as far as being in Playboy. And I got to say, like, I didn't necessarily think of it as harassing at the time because I was just like, honestly, I was thinking like, I can't fucking wait to tell everyone that she's telling me this story. But so she tells me this story and, you know, like in hindsight, I'm kind of like, I don't know. I don't know that I felt harassed by it just because I am not very sensitive to that. And also I did not care and I didn't feel in danger or anything. And I don't feel like she told me this story and then it affected our later my career or something. But you certainly should know better as a boss than to talk about that sort of thing, I would think. But anyway, and yeah, so, and then she tells me basically her whole life story between the two drives, the way up and the way back. And then the next day she comes and picks me up super early and we do the same thing. And she almost tells me verbatim the same set of stories of her life story. So I basically got two shots of the same thing. It was fucking terrible. It was a nightmare. Anyway, but yeah, so like this would be a realistic scenario. Would it be appropriate or inappropriate to tell an employee who with whom you're carpooling that you were like that someone proposed you be in Playboy with them or be in Playboy photographs? And like, yeah, I would say no. It would be pretty amazing, though, to find out your boss had been in Playboy. Not because I'm like, oh, my God, that would be so hot. Just because it would be like finding out your boss was the dentist guy from Troll 2. And you're like, he did this thing when he was younger that I did not expect. And there you go. There it is. He did that. That's something he did. So that was my sexual harassment training. Wasn't that amazing? I do have some corrections to make. Let me see. I was like, do I have any corrections music? Or like corrections sound effects or something? Because I was like, oh, I don't know. I'd like to have a song that's like, womp, 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 womp. Because that's how corrections feel. Let's see. What if I did like sad tuba music? What does that do for me? Sad tuba on YouTube. 4 seconds. Do you think there's going to be a commercial first? I feel like... Oh, here we go. That'll do. Corrections. So I talked about Guitar Center on the last show. I got a tweet that says, your guitar teacher wasn't a 20-something bald guy. He was in a band that had some recognition in the 70s in Canada, and that store wasn't associated with the Guitar Center chain. I don't know, I may have misspoke. I think that the guy who ran the Guitar Center was like not a 20... There were two guys. There was the guitar teacher guy, and he was not bald. And I don't know if he was 20. I think he was in his 20s because at the time I thought he was old, which means he might have been 20. But anyway, he was like a long-haired. He kind of reminded me of Monster Magnet, whoever that guy is, Dave. Dave Monster Magnet. Monster Dave. Anyway, that's in my memory, that's what he reminds me of. The bald guy was the guy who I remember always working at the Guitar Center and smoking. And it wasn't associated with the Guitar Center chain. Now, here's what my question, follow-up question. Was it called Guitar Center or was it called something else, like Guitar World or something? Music World? Some shit like that? I could totally buy that it would be not associated with the actual corporate Guitar Center. And it was just called Guitar Center. I don't know, too, at like what point all this Guitar Center business happened. So anyway, there's our corrections department. Okay. As some of you may know, I moved into a new place. Well, I guess you would all know at this point. How did it go? Well, moving is horrible. Let me start with that. Like, moving is way up there with the most horrible things that a person can do multiple times in their lives. I fucking hate it. Every time someone else does it, you know, they talk about how terrible it is, and it doesn't seem terrible when you're just like, eh, you'll be fine. And then when it's your time to do it, you're like, oh, fuck that. It's like it makes me want to divest myself of everything I've ever owned. It's one of the times, there are certain times in life where, you know, you think like, oh, well, I'm rich in friends and whatever. And there are other times where you're like, I wish I was rich in money. I wish my friends were George Washington, Benjamin Franklin, whoever, Lincoln? Lincoln on the five? Andrew Jackson? 20? He's on the 50. Ulysses S. Grant or something? I wish those monies were my friends, is the point. Because, like, the fantasy, the moving fantasy is, all right, I'm going to just leave everything in my house as it is. I'm going to go away for the weekend on a vacation, and I will come home to my new place, and everything will be put up, and it's just like, and now you're good to go. It's why I think we all, do we all want an Alfred in our lives? Like, I don't need someone to do everything for me. There are certain tasks that I know some people hate that don't bother me. Like, I don't really mind doing laundry. And everyone was like, oh, it'll be such a revolution because you'll have laundry in your apartment that you don't share with anyone. And I was like, eh, it doesn't really bother me. It was like, I just put in a fucking load of laundry, do a podcast, and then come back. So I just hang out at home. It's fine. Or garage. Everyone was like, garage is going to change your life. And I'm like, eh. I mean, it's snowed a couple times and whatever. Although I was like, yeah, but then your car doesn't have snow on it in the morning, so you just leave. But then it gets snowed on all day at work. And so then you just like bring a bunch of snow into your garage. Like, I can bring you from the outside to the inside. One of the downsides, because I'm in a condo. It's like a condo owned by this couple. They own a couple properties. And there's not a huge dumpster where you put your garbage. We basically have our own human-sized garbage can, which isn't so bad, except for when you have something large-ish to throw away, having easy access to a dumpster is pretty sweet. Because you're just like, I'll just fucking throw it in there. Like, it's never full where I was, so that's pretty good. But yeah, I think, and like, we want an Alfred, and the proof is that there are two sort of things that prove we want Alfred. Technology is trying to solve the Alfred problem, but now I think we've moved to a different model. The first model we did was robots. So like the Roomba, because it's like, this is a robot that will vacuum for you. And it's like, that's pretty fucking sweet. I can live with that. And we had one when we had Dibwe at the old house, and it helped. If you have pet allergies and you're getting a pet, get a fucking Roomba, I'm telling you. Because you ain't gonna vacuum every day, and that will vacuum every day. And even if it picks up 30% of the pet hair, that's gonna make a difference. I saw someone was talking about those robot chefs that cost, you know, $20,000. Which at first I was like, oh, so expensive. And then I was like, well, I guess that's like how much my master's degree cost and like what I've made over my career versus what I would have saved in time with Robot Chef. Furthermore, I was like, what if you just opened a restaurant with Robot Chef? Wouldn't it be a novelty for people to go and like, I'm going to eat Robot Chef food? But then the secondary way, because I think that none of that shit really works great, and the price is so high for the result being so little, is that self-driving cars is the other one. And it's like, we're still not quite there. It turns out to be more complicated than we thought. But the other way we've decided to do it is basically we've figured out a way to all have an Alfred, but it's not a single person that we have to employ. So in other words, it's like, okay, well, I can't have an Alfred, so I'll get a Lyft driver. And I'm just employing that person for the time they're driving me, and then they move on. I can't get someone to go pick up food for me, an Alfred, but I can hire someone to do it once. I can't get someone to like go to the liquor store for me, but I can do Postmates and do whatever, you know. We've kind of like socialized. Is that the word I'm looking for? We've spread it out over multiple people. So basically one person is an Alfred for as many people as want whatever. Which is an interesting concept. Although these Alfreds don't make shit, is what I've discovered. But that seems to be the way we've gone. Anyway, so yeah, robot movers, that's going to be a big thing. I think if you have the initial capital investment, moving company is a pretty good way to go. Seems like the insurance is probably expensive, but man, movers are pricey. Or like one of those services that takes storage pods cross country. Jesus Christ, that is some pricey shit. I mean, it's like twice as much to have a couple storage pods transported from one place to another as to get the truck and drive it yourself. So there you go, that just in case you're curious. But yeah, that's like my fantasy, is to just have the house sort of set up and then come back to it. And they could Google, what is that? Google SketchUp the entire house and then put all your furniture, and you could be like, I want this here, this here, this here. Boom, done. So new patron of the show, Patreon patron of the show, who's my sister. So it's official that, well, that's not true. I have one Patreon patron, Matt, who is not directly related to me by blood. I guess my sister-in-law is also not related to me by blood. But I mean, who's not related to me by blood or marriage. I was about to say it's official, everyone that I'm related to is a patron, but my mom is not. I don't know how she feels about this. I wonder if she listens sometimes. I'm like, maybe she does. But then maybe she doesn't. At any rate, she sent me a free trial of Blue Apron. I'm guessing because I must have been talking about it, and she was like on here, and she was like, all right, well, let's give it a try. So I did. And this is not a commercial for Blue Apron, by the way, because it's like, because they won't pay me to do it. Unless Blue Apron, you want to retroactively pay me for this, I would accept that payment. I would cash that check like nobody's business. I would cash that thing so fast it would blow your fucking mind, Blue Apron. Would blow your apron right off your body, or blow the other clothes around your apron off the rest of your body, whatever. So I get this Blue Apron, it's a box. So here's the first thing, you get on there and you have to like select what kind of meals you want. And there's like all kinds of different shit, but maybe not all kinds. There's kind of a handful of things and whatever. The box shows up at your house. You kind of decide which day it's going to show up. It's packed in ice and everything, so it's not going to rot. But also, I guess it's hard for me to say just because the box showed up and it was probably like 20 degrees outside that day. It was probably colder outside the box than inside the box. But whatever. And so I made two meals last night. I made some kind of pasta thing, and I made some kind of Mexican chicken and rice thing, which I kind of fucked up because there were vegetables with it that I was supposed to cook separately, and I cooked them all at once. Because this is kind of like a How Peter Rolls thing. I like to cook things all in just one vessel, if possible. Why? Because years of hand-washing dishes has taught me, like, fuck it, use as few dishes as you possibly can. I'd rather eat something that I don't like as much than do a bunch of dishes. Which is probably stupid, but there you go. So, the pasta dish was pretty good, although I was a little insulted because it came with sultanas. And it was like, put these in, or I'm sorry, it says currants on the bag, but I'm pretty sure it said sultanas in the recipe. And for those of you who don't know, I'm pretty sure a sultana is a raisin. Okay, here we go. The difference between raisins, sultanas, and currants from the kitchen. It's kitchen without an N or an E. They're small, sweet, dried fruits that are used in many of the same ways, but they have their own unique traits. Let's see. While all three are types of dried fruit and used in similar ways, there are several things that set raisins, sultanas, and dried currants apart from each other. Okay, blah, blah, blah. Raisins are dried grapes, specifically dried white-fleshed grapes. So the grapes are initially green in skin color. What? And as they dry, becoming a dense, dark-colored fruit containing small seeds and bursting with flavor. Raisins are commonly eaten out. Okay, I know what a raisin is. Now, sultanas, sometimes just called golden raisins, are golden-colored dried grapes that are made from various varieties of seedless white fleshed grapes. The skin of these fruits start off as pale yellow in color, but unlike raisins, don't darken in the same way as they dry. They're smaller and slightly sweeter. Okay. Currants. While raisins and sultanas are sweet and grow on vines, true black and red currants are quite tart and grow on bushes. The name currant on its own just refers to the fresh currant fruit. So what are these Zante currants? I don't think that's what this is, but I'm not going to read that whole thing. Okay, so they have a slightly different flavor and are grown on a different thing. But I mean, they seem a little samey to me. Call me a, you know, when it comes to raisins, I'm colorblind. And by that, I mean, I fucking hate all of them and wish they would all die. And don't care. Don't care for them. One of the things, it's like, okay. I had a thing at work where someone brought in like a cookie platter. There was like a sugar cookie, a chocolate chip cookie, and an oatmeal raisin. Guess which one nobody had eaten until all the others were gone. Now, will people eat a raisin cookie after, if it's the only kind of cookie available? Yes, they will eat it. But will they wait until every other kind of cookie has been exhausted? Yes. What's the worst bagel? Definitely the raisin bagel. I always hated as a kid that cinnamon raisin toast was a thing because I was like, fuck the raisins, just do the cinnamon and sugar, man. That's what we want. It was sort of like if you wanted to have something that was tasty, they were like, well, we're going to punish you with a raisin as well. I don't know why. I don't know how that was decided, but it's what was decided. Just, and so Blue Apron, it's like, it's got this dish and it's like pasta, some kind of bolognese or something. Got like pork and tomato and whatever. And it's like, oh, and take all these other little extra steps to prepare these sultanas, which on the bag say currants. It makes me think that whoever's at Blue Apron packing these things is like, oh, fuck this. It's like they're scooping from one thing that says raisins into a little bag. And they're just like, well, some of these bags say currants, some say sultanas, some say raisins, all the same. So it makes me think that just fuck the raisins. Like, stop. Everyone just stop. I know there's somebody out there who's like, but I like raisins. Okay, that's fine. But you know what? How about instead of the entire world having to deal with, like, those disgusting cinnamon raisin bagels, you just bring your own little boxes of raisins everywhere, which they make in very convenient style, and you can just, like, press them into the bagel before you eat it. How about that? Just glue them on there and eat them. And do you think glue is going to ruin the taste of a raisin? Because I don't think so. I don't think it's a delicious, delicate flavor. It's a disgusting little dried fruit bag. It looks like a little nut sack. Like, if each testicle had its own nut sack, that's what it would look like on, like, a very old man. And, like, the Blue Apron thing, I was just sort of like, I feel like this whole thing is where they're trying to score these points for being fancy. Because it's like, oh, yeah, we've got these sultanas in... It's like, basically, you're making a spaghetti kind of thing. And they're like, but when we add the sultanas, that's when they're going to be like, holy shit. And I'm kind of like, no, fuck that. I don't need to be fancied. Okay? Fancy don't let me down. No one's letting me down by not including a raisin in a thing. I will not be disappointed if raisins are excluded. Raisins are not welcome to the party. That's all I'm saying. And you know what? I was like, I'm going to skip these because I don't like them. And the dish turned out great. So there you go. So thanks for the Blue Apron thing. I now have to cancel it. They're like on an Audible system, you know, where you sign up for Audible. And then they're like, okay, so here's how it works. You get like a 30-day free trial and then we just start charging you. Or Amazon Prime or Blue Apron all work the same way. I wonder if Blue Apron's an Amazon thing, because that seems to be their trick. Is they're like, we'll give you whatever. Like, Netflix should do that. They should be like, 24 hours of free Netflix. And then if you don't sign up, we just automatically charge you. It's a good system. It's a good trick. Well, I think that's that. We've covered most of it. I'm going to pick up Poon Master Flex in about a week and a few days. She'll be coming around the mountain with me. And then we'll be back here together. Maybe the Poonie and Pete show will become a reality. What you've all been dreaming of could become reality. But in the meantime, I've taken the nerd level to a new height, which is I've decided to start hand-binding my own comic books. I had a couple books I subscribed to last year because I was like, you know, there are a couple books that I like and I want them to make more of, and like one of them was a Chip Zdarsky book. People will know I'm a fan. And I was like, well, I want Marvel to like keep writing, having him write stuff, so I'm going to subscribe to his book and be like, okay, so maybe you should get him to do more stuff. So they're of no value, because when you get comic books in the mail, it seems like they send them to you by first shooting them through a swamp, rolling them up in a tube, blasting them to your house over a fine grit sandpaper, and then they show up, and they're in a plastic bag with like a backing board of some kind. It's also hilarious because it's like on the board it says like do not bend, right? Because it's like, yeah, I don't want my comics to turn into a tube until I turn them into a tube. Then it's fine. But the mail seems to be like, oh, fuck that. We do what we want. We're the mail, motherfucker. So they're not in like good shape. Right? I know you were all very concerned that I was going to be destroying comics that are of high value. Don't worry. I have no intention of doing that. And so anyway, it's like a hand sewing, hand binding process that I'm looking into. And I'm going to try it out. Because I don't know. I guess I needed a hobby. I don't have enough things to occupy my mind and body. And what could be nerdier than hand binding your own comics? You're like, oh, well, here are some reasons you could do it. But I do kind of like sometimes when people do stuff like that. Like I had this old coworker who would like homemade like Twix bars and stuff like that. And there was something to me that was kind of interesting about doing that. It was kind of infuriating too, because I was like, well, just eat a Twix. Why don't you make something you can't buy? But at the same time, I'm like, you start to get it when you're older, I think. Or I don't know. When you're me, you start to get it because you're like, you know, this is just more interesting. I'm curious how this is done. I think I could do this, and maybe I could do a better job than whatever. And now I don't have to wait for, like, comics companies to decide, like, we should collect these comics into a huge trade paperback. I'm also very interested. I'm expanding a collection of Lobo comics because I'd like to bind them myself, because I'm wondering if they'll ever put those out in like a big omnibus edition. I kind of doubt it, because I think that like they were somewhat inappropriate for the time and now would be seen as super inappropriate. So they're like, I think that's one that they might just want to let die. And I'm like, no, well, I'm interested. I'm intrigued. So I'll just do it myself. You guys can't stop me. Not gonna stop me. Somebody should. Ta-na-na-ta-na. Yeah, and on that note, I guess that's it. Thanks everybody for listening. We'll see you next time. You have a great week now. Let's talk about bum one, yeah. Asking the questions that nobody could. Like, where are the bone dogs in? Are they in harmony? Do-do-do-do-do. You're a helpful snowman.